Pucci, and you're listening to Ralph Pucci, the podcast. You're listening to season two of our show, and the theme of this season is power couples in the arts. We're thrilled to have two of our longtime friends and supporters on the show today, Stephanie Ahrens and David Howell of DHD Architecture and Design. Stephanie and David are some of the most creative and talented people in the industry, and we were grateful to have had the chance to talk to them. Due to the realities of living during this global pandemic, we're still doing our interviews over Zoom. Because of that, at times, the sound quality of this interview is less than perfect. We apologize, but still wanted to put this episode out because Stephanie and David are so interesting and informative. This episode is a must-listen for anyone specifically interested in interior design and/or architecture. We hope that you enjoy it. All right, Stephanie and David, thank you both so much for being with us here on today's episode of Ralph Pucci, the podcast. We're thrilled to have you both. And Ralph, I'm going to let you introduce our guests today.
We're really excited to introduce two of my good friends, longtime supporters, and I think super talented and with a career, that big career still ahead of them, Stephanie and David.
Thanks, Ralph. Good to be here.
Great to be here. We've missed you.
Yeah, we missed you too. Hopefully, we'll see you soon. We have a lot of exciting things to show you here. But one of the questions I wanted to ask, I know we met years ago through Clota.
Yeah.
You both worked there.
Yeah, my dad jokingly says, all roads lead to Clota.
Right, absolutely.
And I started working there, and I actually went to visit my friend Ray Booth, who was in Milan. For a two-week period. And when I came back from my holiday, Stephanie was sitting in my chair. So that's how we met. I had to get her out of my chair, and that caused a bit of a stir. Do you have a version of that story?
Yeah, I mean, I think I started early in my career, started with Clota, and she was somebody I really, really wanted to work for. And it was just such a huge opportunity to get hired in my early 20s. And lo and behold, somebody returned from a trip. His name was David Howell. He had this Kiwi accent. Clota has her Irish accent. And it just, kind of all came together. And she's extraordinary woman in our lives, still a very close friend and a mentor. And, I really started working with her at the beginning of my career. So she's part of our family, and we stay in good touch with her. I know all of her children. I've traveled with her to Ireland and Japan. We have quite a credible relationship. And actually, I stayed working with Clota for almost 10 years.
10 years you're working together, huh?
Yeah, I became a partner, I think, when I was 27 with her, when she was inducted into the Hall of Fame ceremony. And then only when I had my twins, did David and I just kind of, figure out that I could do consulting out of his office. And then I started getting, a few more projects and saying, oh, I need an architect. Oh, I need a project director. I actually need two desks. And so it kind of grew into us, into us actually working together. But we did meet at Clota's. I stayed at Clota's for quite a while, and really fantastic career with her and so many opportunities. And I can see now with a woman-owned company, which is such a popular thing to talk about now, but that was years and years and years ago, in the early 90s. And she was a trailblazer and had incredible clients and a real artistic approach, healing approach. So I don't know, all of those values, all of that's been kind of wrapped up into me and my work and brought that into, David and the architecture part of DHD, I think. So she's huge.
Stephanie, did you know that you wanted to be a designer your entire life, or how did you come to that decision?
I think I knew pretty early on. I actually applied to interior design schools for college. So somehow worked that out in high school, I think through one of these great career counselors at high school, who talked through many different options. And I had been, rearranging my room and picking out colors and painting you know, different colors in the house and rearranging the living room and many things like that. But I think my best friend had her father had this incredible townhouse. I spent my high school years in Washington, D.C. They had this amazing townhouse that was done by a designer. Every inch had faux finishing on the walls. He had an incredible art collection. It was something I hadn't ever really been exposed to. And the more and more she and I became friends and the more time I spent at his residences, I realized, you know, just all the details. And I realized, like, I just love this. I love walking around this townhouse and the different rooms and the flooring and the colors and the patterns. So, yeah, I think that I was lucky that I knew pretty early on that I wanted to be in design. So I did do a program, you know, a college degree.
And David, did you have a similar experience knowing that you wanted to be an architect early on?
Oh, not really. So I grew up in New Zealand, and I think I was making something in the driveway, and one of my parents' friends came by, and my suggested, oh, look, they knew that I could draw, and here I was making a go-kart. They sort of said, oh, maybe make a good architect. And literally that sort of stuck, that sort of random comment. And so at 14, I went to work in an architect's office in Havelock North. And that sort of made an impression on me. And I sort of decided then, okay, I'll go to architecture school. The thing you've got to realize is that studying architecture and practicing architecture is two entirely different things. I happen to love both. And it was sort of quite a coincidence. Like, I went to architecture school and I found it very challenging, but I loved it. And that when I actually came to actually practice architecture, I found that I loved that even more. And so that was a happy coincidence. So I don't think I think it was just pure luck how I, you know, got into the profession initially.
And what did you do, David? You came to New York and you started practice? How did it all happen?
So once I graduated in New Zealand, I went and worked for a local architect called Lane Priest Architects. And after about 4 years of working for them, I decided to set up my own business and start my company in New Zealand. But I felt entirely guilty about, you know, sort of setting up an opposition to two of my best friends who I just finished working for. And so I went on a trip around LA, New York, Paris, Barcelona, which I'd never done. And I sort of it opened my eyes to a lot of things. I came to New York and sort of thought, wow. So I literally went back to New Zealand, packed up, and came in and moved here, sort of all within 3 or 4 months. So it was quite a big move at the age of 30. I shifted careers based on my trip to New York and sort of set about finding my way about how to get a job and how to get started and started my career. So literally my first move in New York was back in the day, Interior Design Magazine published the names and addresses of architects and designers that were in the feature in the magazine. So my job, my strategy was, because I only had one resume, was that I'd look in the back of the magazine, find someone that had an address, and walk over to their place and drop off my resume, and I'd pick it up in the morning if I didn't get a job. So the second place I went to was Clodagh, and she gave me a job. So that's literally how I started my career here.
That's fantastic. You know, David, when I first got into the furniture business, I did a mannequin. I started with Andre Putman with a mannequin. Mm-hmm. And then after about 2 years, Andre said, why don't we work together in furniture? And then she says, let's have an opening. I said, okay, who am I going to invite? All the stores that I sell to, you know, they only come to New York twice a year, most of them, December show and a June show. So we had to find this whole new audience. So it's funny that you said you just opened up Interior Design Magazine. I think I did the same thing. We just went through Interior Design Magazine, went through like 50 names, just mailed those people, and that was it. And it, I mean, talk about, you know, being totally like being thrown into it. That's how it works. Not everyone has a plan, or everyone has a loose plan. But yeah, it doesn't have to be in stone.
Yeah.
And that was Stanley Abercrombie, I think. Mayor Russ was editors, and that was a very different magazine. But literally, that was back in the print. Everyone was, remember browsing through magazine stores, you wait for the latest magazine to come out and look at the design. And that was how we lived. And that's how we got exposure to a lot of design and a lot of architecture, all through photography. we interpreted and understood architecture and design through photography, especially international stuff. So, yeah, it was intriguing. That was like early 90s. I mean, it was 92, first push.
Yeah, fantastic. It's such a cool way of creating a career. Mm. And when you tell kids this, you know, it's not like, okay, here's what you do. It's not step A, B, C, and D. It's like, just get in there and do it.
Right, absolutely. So after 2 years working for Clodagh, and I did tell Clodagh this in my interview, after 2 years, I have to leave you. I'm going to do my own thing. And so after 2 years, I literally took my drawing board out from under my bed and put it on my dining room table. And I didn't have one single client. I sort of just thought, you know, create a vacuum, and I wondered who my first client would be. And you know, somehow we just rolled into a couple of phone calls, and then Ken Gibbon from Rothmans found us somehow, and we started working on Ken's house up in Scarsdale. And that sort of led into, you know, one referral after the next. So literally it was a, you know, creating a vacuum, and then and things will fill it. Very haphazard, and I wouldn't recommend that path, but I think everyone chooses their own, you know, a unique way to start your business.
Absolutely.
It can work out. So talking about some of your first projects, tell us a bit about your favorite projects that you've done.
Well, I think, you know, that's always such a hard design question, because, you know, every new project that you're working on, you know, you're going to different levels and different areas. But I think that the projects that I have really enjoyed within the, you know, last couple of years are some older ones, but have been some of the ones that really include architecture and interior design, even though I do more of the interiors. And that's what's so great that, you know, David and I can work together and have those two disciplines, even though we have different backgrounds. But there's something just so incredibly satisfying about, you know, really looking at a home from the walls and the floor and the viewpoints, and then, you know, the overall feeling of a space, and then how you're going to live in that space, and, you know, getting to what the colors and the textures and the finishes are ultimately going to be. But, you know, we've worked in 157, the tower, quite a bit for a couple of different clients. And, you know, we've had really free artistic expression with those clients. And some clients are more, you know, more involved in every single detail, and some just really want you to present, like, if you were going to make this the most extraordinary space, what would you do? And I think that those often are some of the, you know, the sweet spots that we love, and we love the collaboration with our clients, and that always happens as well. But I think the views up in, you know, these new towers that are, they're quite tall, they're quite awkward in the sky, but when you're actually inside of them and you're seeing the parks and the rivers and, you know, a vantage point that you don't often see up until very recently. That would be one, but I do love our classic, you know, our classic lofts designs, because lofts are quite special.
Yeah.
And as, you know, David normally says, when you go to an old loft, we're working on, you know, beautiful loft in Soho, on Wooster Street, and it's often, you know, like what needs to remain to feel authentic, and what do you want to keep that adds to the new story of the new tenant? And that's often, you know, probably the most challenging thing to figure out and to decide with the client. They may say, oh, we just want it all new. We don't like these old floors or these columns. Let's cover them. And there may, you know, be a big decision about, you know, cast iron columns are beautiful. Let's preserve them. Let's expose them. Let's take them out of closets or get them out of inside the walls. So I think it's hard to say if there's a favorite project, because I just love the design process. I get very excited and I'm very passionate about it.
I have to think about what I really love about what I do. It's actually working with the same or similar group of artisans and collaborators that we have the privilege of working for in many of our projects. So, and we try to bring that group together. So we recently finished a project in Utah, And we managed to get Face Design to do a lot of the work and they did, you know, the front door. And so collaborating with some of these other real talented artisans is something that is common to every project and every really, really good project. So actually, my best project is the ones where we can bring in the talent that's just oozing out of like Brooklyn, New York City. It's just, you know, you can, there's no point in naming it. Chris is one, Lindsay, Tyler, I mean, Jim Zivic, another bit, all this, this layers of people. So if we bring that team together, we can collaborate. That's the most exciting thing about every project for me. I love different signatures. I love different voices. I love that collaborative process.
Do you find you're doing, obviously, you know, with COVID, are you doing a lot of work outside of the city right now, Florida or?
Yeah, we do. Look, it's funny. You always get these sort of eccentric characters who live here who have these houses, you know, wherever. Mexico, Newport Beach, Ulta, Chicago. So over the years, you do tend to do that. I would love to get another job in New Zealand. You know, when I left New Zealand, I actually had to turn down a lot of work and stop my practice there. I would take a job there. But really, actually, if you want to, as an architect, you really want to be involved in a project. It involves so much time. And if you really want to get to that detail and have the passion in the construction process, you have to spend a lot of time there. So it's difficult a long way away from your home base. So we do projects, but like most of our work is right around Lower Manhattan, Brooklyn.
Because of COVID, We are doing more projects. You know, we've got a few ground-up houses in the Hamptons now. I have work up in Connecticut. We're working on some projects upstate in the Catskills. So I think as people left the city and went to other houses or bought other houses, we've definitely gone with them, you know, to these other destinations.
Speaking about COVID, how has the experience been for you? I know your family is based here in Manhattan. Did you stay here the entire time? What was the experience overall?
We have been back since after Labor Day a bit, but we did go up to we have a house in the Catskills, and we did go up to the Catskills for a bit, and then we spent the summer out in the Hamptons, May through kind of middle of September. David flew down to New Zealand with one of our twin daughters because her school was going online and she decided to take a semester off. So he spent a month in New Zealand. So we've been doing, you know, a lot of different things. But basically we walk, you know, we live in Gramercy Park area. Our office is in Union Square. We can walk to work very easily. You know, we feel safe in our office. We just moved into gorgeous big loft space offices. So we've got a lot of room here and we have so many beautiful objects.
Twice the space, half the people.
Yeah.
Like, we're naturally isolated just by the fact of, you know, we're less than we were and we moved into a big office.
So you live just a few blocks away from where you work.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. And so we've kind of, we love this community. Our kids, you know, went to school a few blocks from our office. We've always lived near here. We're, you know, big New Yorkers, love the Flatiron, love all the local places, and Pucci being one of them, of course. So, yeah, it's a great office space, and you're welcome to come here anytime. But we'd like to come see your new floor first, because that just sounds amazing.
We got a deal. You come here, and then we'll come.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about how the two of you collaborate on a project. Walk us through the process when you get a new client. How does it go from there?
We have very different skill sets, which is a great thing when you're actually partnering up with in business. So there's almost nothing that overlaps in terms of what we do, what we're good at, and what we bring to a project. So that's really, really good because I really admire Stephanie's skills and she can do things that I can't do. So in terms of us working on a project, and we're working on a project together, you know, we begin our macro scale architectural analysis and sort of like, you know, I think that you need to think outside the box initially, and you need to, you know, dive in deep into the thinking and the meaning behind what you're trying to achieve. come up with that first idea, come up with that first plan or whatever. However you crack that egg, however you get into the project, whatever means you can find to find a way and to understand the problem. And that's often different techniques and to lead you to a different solution. And that's when I think Stephanie steps in and sort of adds another layer. And as we go through the project, it overlaps a lot more.
Yeah, I would say that our architecture kind of starts the project off. So if it's a townhouse and maybe we're gutting the townhouse and taking off the rear facade, determining, floor heights and how much it's going to be glass and all of that, I would say the architects definitely take the lead in that. But we, as interiors, we get on early on to kind of listen in and maybe say, we're going to need a much bigger bathroom, or can we, readdress this area to make sure that the dressing rooms are, large enough for two or things like that. So we're involved early on, but we kind of let the architects figure out the shell and the rhythm and the flow of the space. Of course, interjecting things that we know from interiors that families, need storage for kids' things and
sometimes annoyingly. I must say.
Yeah, don't forget.
The last house, we're working in a house in Quag, and I was like, the client had a meeting with the interior division, and they came back to the floor plan. I was like, what? Put a wall in the middle of our pavilion. Then you can't do that. So it is a back and forth, but we do have that fluid approach. It's really good being in the same office, overlapping, skills and what you bring to the project.
I think that, beyond the architecture, then you're trying to create a space that clients are really going to be able to live and thrive and enjoy in. And do they have, three kids, or do they have three dogs? How we're always trying to figure out from architecture, but also the interiors is like how we're going to walk through a space, how people function in the space. What are they, big entertainers? Are they going to be working from home, which a lot of people are? What are the needs? What's the programming? So I think we come in pretty early on after, they might have figured out where the staircase is going.
You layer in a lot of the artisans at that point too. We're working out, as part of the early presentations, we're working out what's the texture and the fabric of the interior of the project. And it's often bringing in those artisans, whether it's even just, textures or finishes, but that collaborative process happens pretty early on. And we start talking about that collaborative process with the clients. So by the time we come down to really doing the interiors, they're already thinking about that broader team. I think you do that particularly well. You bring in the artists.
Yeah, well, back to what David was saying in terms of the collaborative process, that is a huge part with artisans, a huge part of every project that we do and that we really so enjoy. And we've been working and collaborating with people for 20 years, some amazing metal workers to plaster, specialty finish, people that do unique floors and floor finishes, really everything. Lighting design's a huge piece. We're always identifying pretty early on where, the big pieces are going to go. Is it going to be an air bay fixture in the dining room? Is something going to be trickling down a staircase? Like, where is the decorative lighting going to be happening? And have we made it suitable architecturally so that those experiences can happen in a really, informative way. But I would say that we interact quite different. We have our own teams. And we, as David said, we do very different disciplines. He really doesn't cross over on my input that much at all when it comes to furniture and the decorative lights that we're selecting, or the wall finishes or floor finishes. But we do, I feel like interiors does cross over a bit more with architecture in the beginning to make sure that the millwork is responding, the kitchen, the flow, all of that has to actually have real people living in it and not just be beautiful. Yeah.
No, true. One thing I learned as an architect moving to New York City. So as an architect working 5 years in new construction in New Zealand, most architects come up with a furniture plan which basically had two Corbusier three-seater sofas facing each other and one side table. maybe a rug to one underneath. But that was the furniture painting. It was the same furniture. And when I first came to New York, you're forced to deal with interiors as architects. It's built. So you're dealing with interior space. So you very quickly learn how to design for social, success. Like, how do you do a furniture panel? It's not just that generic, simple act where here's two sofas and we're done. So I learned that, and it was something that actually had to learn, trial and error. But it's something I really did and start enjoying too. So there was a very big part of my initial training once I moved up to New York was dealing with the interior nature of an architect living in New York. And I can guarantee you, every architect who lives here has to deal with the same thing. We're dealing with largely interior spaces. So that has to be something you've got to adapt to and learn how to do.
David, who are some of your heroes in the architecture field?
Peter Zumthor would be my, in terms of experience architecture, what he did at Thermé Bal, I think, is just in the Swiss Alps. You know that building? It's a spa.
Yes, of course.
Well, first of all, it's just unimaginably amazing that you get to not only experience the architecture, but you're sort of almost naked in the water, and you get to immerse yourself in a building, which is like, imagine a sculpture that is submerged in water. And that's what it feels like. So you get to float around this incredible piece of architecture. I've never had that experience in any other building that you get to go inside it like that. And I think it's the detail, the stonework, the bronze, the lighting, I think that's one of his most phenomenal buildings I've ever been in, been inside or experienced. Other heroes, I think Saarinen was, the way he worked, those huge models, he didn't even get to see huge overscale models, and he'd climb inside them, and I think that's so inspiring that he managed to immerse himself in architecture and come up with these incredible, not only furniture, but these buildings. I think that's just phenomenal skill there. I have admiration for Frank Gehry, not love of the, but I admire. Todd Williams, wonderful architect. Ando, I love concrete. I think the Swiss and the Japanese do concrete incredibly well. We did this concrete house out in Ultra. It was extremely challenging to get the concrete mix right. But, looking at the way that they can get concrete finishes is inspiring. So, and the way he draws. So that's a, four or five. And one thing I must say, so when I did come to New York, this is rewinding a little bit, and I was walking around trying to find a job and I hadn't been to Clothes yet. But Todd Williams did give me an interview, and it stayed with me all my career because he was gracious enough. And he spoke to me for 20 minutes. He said, at the beginning of the interview, he said, I don't have a job for you, but I know it must be very discouraging trying to find a job in New York. And I just wanted to give you a moment inside an architect's office and show you what we're working on. And I remember that because it's so, you feel so much on the outside. And so when people come to my office and ask for an interview, ask to come in, I say, yes, come on in. We don't always have a job, but come on the inside, look at our office. Experience something. I think there's a lesson there about being gracious and giving.
A question we always love to end with is, what advice do you have for someone trying to break into the industry?
I can go either way, because I see the way where I think it's incredibly important to have a formal education in your, in your art. So if you want to be an architect or if you want to be an interior designer, I think that going to accredited school and learning how to use CAD and do Revit and 3D and all the necessary tools that you actually need now. Many years ago when we were starting, CAD was just coming out. You didn't actually need that. It came out towards, kind of the middle end of my education. But now it's literally, and so we drew everything by hand. But now, there are certain tools that you really actually need to learn when you're young and you want to be hired into a design firm. So I do recommend that you get some kind of training, whether that's a 2-year program night school for CAD classes, you know, depending on where you are in your life, or a full degree program. And then, you know, looking into LEED certified further education or further education for interior designers or architecture. I think there's great value in that. But then on the other hand, I think that if you're just a creative person and you've come from a different background and you already had a college degree in something else, and sometimes that person will walk through our door and I can see they're not formally trained, but they've got a great eye, great way with people. So we kind of look at different things, and, you know, people are changing careers. Much like you've come from education and now you've joined family business, you know, there's a lot to be said for people that do that. And I think that, you know, we wouldn't shut our door on that. We're interested in, you know, lots of different things and different backgrounds. But I would certainly say that a good, you know, firm education is a good starting point for anybody.
Great.
Just find what you're passionate. Find what turns you on. Doesn't matter what it is. Just find the thing that you really love, whether it's a detail, whether it's a color, whatever. If you find something you really, really love and that's your passion, that's going to be your direction. That's what I think is go with that. And then you'll find you've got a path that you love. So I would just, you know, follow that passion, follow what you love, and don't follow the rules. Just go your own way, you know.
Well said. You can't follow the rules. You follow the rules, you become predictable, you become a commodity. I have one more question for you before we jump off. So you work together, you go home. What's it like?
We don't talk about work.
We don't talk about work.
Is that the question?
That was my question, because
we try not to. We try to. It's very, very hard, but it can be too much. You're like, you know what? I need to switch off. And we didn't start out wanting to work together. And so we definitely limits, and it is tough sometimes. And over COVID, it was like, it was scary. So there's a lot of, it was tough, but we try to separate it out. Yeah, it's not always easy, not always successful. But
in my family, when Nicole and Michael are over, my wife makes it a point to say, now we're not going to talk business.
Unfortunately,
I think we talk a lot of business. And then, you know, of course, you know, we keep going and going. And she says, well, I don't need to be here. I'll just leave this conversation. I'll come back in. We won't talk business.
Yeah. But it's true. I think that, you know, when you're home with your family, I think if you can tone it down or keep it to business hours, it's a lot healthier for your relationships in general. And you want to grow both sides of your brain and your heart. You want to be with your family and enjoy things, and then also have your career. So it is, I think, a family
navigate
it. Yeah.
Sure. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we really appreciate it. And thank you everyone for listening to today's episode. Thanks for listening to today's episode. To learn more about Stephanie Ahrens and David Howell, check out their website, dhd.nyc, or their Instagram page, David Howell Design. Stay tuned for our next episode featuring Spencer Fung and Teresa Rovieras.